okay, we had our introduction from George Winston.
I think we cut George short there, darling.
We cut him a little short. We could hear a little bit more, but it's time open up Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater. And your host, Claudio, Renaissance man and bard of WCOM, found the doors of our new location.
Yes, indeed.
For the Speakeasy.
Right next to the cat's cradle.
Absolutely.
Almost fell into it.
And actually got the front door open and got in and got us all set and ready to go. So we invite you all in to find a seat, get comfortable in the place where you're always welcome and can always expect the best. Claudio, take us away.
Good morning, everyone. I want to say that we have two intriguing guests today from the Rusty Bucket Kids film. We've got the director-screenwriter Kevin McDermott, or Kevin Robert McDermott, let me say the name right, and also Scott Andrew Taylor, who played the young Abe Lincoln in the film, and we'll go into that to much more of an extent throughout the rest of the show. In the meantime, I want to acknowledge a few people, including our sponsor, a primary sponsor, the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham. We've got Al Jarreau coming up this weekend, and I'm actually stage managing him. That's going to be on the 19th, I believe, on Saturday. Anyway, they've got all kinds
that
of functions coming up. I'm
great.
Really looking forward to that. I'd be amazed.
One of these days I've got to find out where the Carolina Theater is and get over there.
Yes, I'd be amazed if it wasn't a bit of a sellout. But before I go any further, let me get this microphone my way. There we go. Sorry, folks. Trying to get this water bucket to fly. There's been a new element discovered. I just thought everyone out there should know. Lawrence Livermore Laboratories has discovered the heaviest element yet known to science. The new element, governmentium, GV, has one neutron, 25 assistant neutrons, 88 deputy neutrons, and 198 assistant deputy neutrons, giving it an atomic mass of 312. These 312 particles are held together by forces called morons, which are surrounded by vast quantities of lepton-like particles called pions. Since governmentium has no electrons, it is inert. However, it can be detected because it impedes every reaction with which it comes into contact. Impedes, yes. A tiny amount of governmentium can cause a reaction that would normally take less than a second to take from 4 days to 4 years to complete. Governmentium has a normal half-life of 2 to 6 years. It does not decay, but instead undergoes a reorganization in which a portion of the assistant neutrons and deputy neutrons exchange places. In fact, governmentium's mass will actually increase over time, since each reorganization will cause more morons to become neutrons, forming isotopes. This characteristic of moron promotion leads some scientists to believe that governmentium is formed whenever morons reach a critical concentration. This hypothetical quantity is referred to as critical morass. When catalyzed with money, governmentium becomes administratium, an element that radiates just as much energy as governmentium, since it has half as many peons but twice as many morons. May God help us survive this growing mass before it becomes a black hole that sucks us all in. And that's my comment for the governmentium.
I want a copy of that. That is just absolutely splendid.
I don't know how I can follow that, Claudio.
No? You want me to read it again? Just look outside your window at local politics. I think John Demers, if he's listening, might appreciate that one. I won't be any meaner than that to the government today, but I'm really quite curious as to what possible statement can be made about that oil spill. It just sort of breaks my heart that goes on in Louisiana.
Well, you get government and then you've got big business.
Yes.
So who do you want to go after? Or are they both the same?
Yes, and all they're doing is covering more ass. There we go.
Or their ass.
Exactly. There we go. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was the fellow with whom I'm going to start the show, Kevin Robert McDermott. He is the director and screenwriter for the wonderful Rusty Bucket Kids. I'm going to get the title right. I know there's been a slight alteration from the original title, but I think...
Rusty Bucket Kids.
Rusty Bucket Kids, that's it. So you can look it up that way on the internet as well, and we're going to give you that whole scoop. And I've also got Scott Andrew Taylor. Keep reminding myself to use all three names like I do my own, so it works. Of course, on the radio, all I use is Claudio because nobody wants to hear the rest of my names. So, Kevin, I'm going to spill it over your way. Welcome to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, and I would love to sort of get the whole spectrum of what the Rusty Bucket Kids is from you, the director, screenwriter.
Well, first, I want to thank you for inviting us today. This is a great pleasure. And I love your new digs.
Thank you. Me too, man. I forgot to mention that this morning. We're in new digs.
Yes, and Andre, nice gorgeous. To meet you as well.
Nice to meet you. Glad you're here.
Well, the Rusty Bucket Kids was conceived by John Demers, our executive
yes, indeed.
Producer. And he created the story. And it's basically about time travel with two kids who go back in time to help historic characters during their teenage years. Mm-hmm. And Scott happens to be our first historic character. He plays, although he's 17, he played Abraham Lincoln at 15.
The young
15.
Abe Lincoln, exactly, yes. So, yeah, no, I'm just motioning for him to get closer to the mic when he does say something. There we go. So he played the young, the premise of the story is the young children of today going back in time to meet legends as children themselves, which I think is a wonderful premise.
And they really help the teenage historic character get on track for their journey towards who they would become as men
yes.
or women. And the fame they would later achieve in the culture and fiber and independence of our nation.
Helping them to essentially to combat any self-doubt they might be having along their journey, because the children of today already know how history is going to turn out.
And that's really the joy of this project, working with, of course, all the cast and the crew. But the joy was the concept that we could actually see a youthful perspective of a historic character, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. oftentimes, at least in the public schools where I had my education a little bit ago, everything was you met these stodgy older people in history.
It, yeah.
It didn't live and breathe. You couldn't relate to them. In this way, young people can at least relate to the characters in their teenage years. So they have and we. Always have contemporary type issues within the storylines. So the struggle of yesteryear is really the struggle of today for most youth too, in all the different stories.
And I also like the design behind the whole thing, having spoken with you and with John Demers, who's been on the radio show a number of times, has a fantastic view on what independent film is all about. But the premise of the story is actually to get the children of today interested in looking up historical characters and basically studying history more, hoping to inspire people to want to take a stronger look at history so that we don't keep repeating it.
Well, that's one of the biggest things about kids, particularly in high school, is they all hate history because it's taught with dates and facts.
It's made boring.
And you never get the people involved. I think I was in college before I finally had a history teacher that talked about all the stories about, particularly Henry VIII, was quite an interesting character. And began to realize that history is made of people. It's not just facts and figures.
Yes, there's a lot more to the meat on the bones. Right. And coming a little in your direction there, Scott, you just got back from the Dominican Republic some sort of a church venture. Tell us about that, and then we'll talk some about the film.
Yeah, myself and a group of about 16 or 17 other people from our church went down to the Dominican Republic last week. Mm-hmm. Stayed down there for 7 days.
Scott, you need to get close.
Okay. There we go.
Can you hear me now? Sorry, folks. We're still learning to pedal this paddle wheeler. Here we go.
All right. So, you know, we went down there with the church. We were helping them get established. They were in the process of expanding, you know, getting new buildings and new properties. And mm-hmm. so we helped them clean up a lot of stuff. And, you know, we worked with some of the ministries down there. So it was a really cool time. We went snorkeling down in a reef. Yeah, that was really cool.
Beautiful blue water there.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing.
I spent some time in Puerto Plata, which is the yacht basin there, or the entry point. And at the time, the Haitian situation, this was back in the 70s, the Haitian situation was not as friendly as it is now, and of course, sadly, as dramatic as everything is now. But I was curious as to whether your church was actually doing something for the Haitian side, but it sounded to me like you had more going on mm-hmm. just the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, we were more on the right side, on the east side of the island. Mm-hmm. We were about an hour from the capital, and Juan Duelo was the place of the was the city that we were in. So we went, you know, we went touring the capital for a while. You know, it was very interesting. They had a lot of war, monuments, and we went shopping in the markets. That was a lot of fun, having all the people.
Some goat cheese from any of the marketeers in the street.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And then, of course, yesterday or the day before, you left the Dominican Republic.
Yep.
And to tell us about this exhausting trip that you had coming back. And,
well,
of course, he comes to the radio show today after having about four hours sleep.
Well, about 2 hours sleep. We actually flew into New York from, you know, you'd think we'd go into Miami or something.
But
we went up to New York and then down to Charlotte. Got into Charlotte about midnight, and then it was about 4 o'clock when I got home last night. And then, you know, 2 hours of sleep, and then came up here. So.
Wow.
Yep.
You said it's strength and vigor.
One day. Yeah.
I got the coffee and the energy drinks going, so.
I was halfway expecting to get a call. Can't really make it today. But to jump ahead quickly, how is it you connected with the whole Rusty Bucket project? And then fell into the Abe Lincoln thing. I'm sure Kevin has something to contribute there, but just curious about your experience auditioning and coming into this whole thing.
Yeah, my agent, Ann Green, set me up with the audition with Kevin, and pretty much there wasn't too many people that were auditioning for this role.
Well, that's an understatement, actually.
Too many people look like Abe. This guy actually does.
It was amazing because I've shared this story with Scott as well, but when he walked, after the fact, of course, but when he walked through the door, all I could think was, oh, please let him be able to act. Please let him be able to act. Because the look was astounding.
It is amazing.
Facial structure, the height, and just everything about him.
He's about 6 foot, folks, just in case you don't know.
6'3".
In case you can't see him in Radio Land, he's 6'3".
Yes.
There we go.
All right.
Yeah.
And so, and a youthful look, absolutely perfectly for the look of the role.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, he's a spectacular actor. So I auditioned a total of, one person.
I had no idea.
It's very non-Hollywood of us.
Yes.
And that's how I got the part. I was the only one auditioning. That's a good way to get it.
We've got to figure out how to pull that off more often.
Well, you know, Scott, you had the advantage, too, of being the first up, and after you, why bother looking?
Yeah, and it was right before I went into the audition, my agent said, now, you're the only one auditioning for this part. And I was like, oh, great. Now, pressure's on now. But.
So I'm the only one that's going to get turned down, right?
Yeah, but it worked out good.
Hey, it worked out great. I know when I did the viewing at the Civic Center, you could hear this sort of hush coming through the audience when they saw his look, because he really did. You could believe that it was a young Abe Lincoln. Really pulled it off, kid.
What kind of work have you done before, Scott?
This was my first speaking role as an actor. I've been an extra on 2 commercials and done some very small little films with an acting school. And, you know, I used to make my own, little videos and skits that I would do for my family. But this was the first official, big role that I've gotten. So
you've always been interested in the profession.
Yeah, yeah. And then in 2008, in November, I got into an acting school.
Uh-huh.
And stayed there for about a year, and then, you know, from there, one of the teachers directed me to her agent, Ann Green.
Uh-huh.
And auditioned for them, got represented, and the rest is history, I guess.
Wow.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's just the beginning of the story.
I hope so,
It really is just the beginning, because not only is Scott a very talented actor, but we were fortunate enough for him to volunteer his services after he was finished. He was shot out after the first week.
Uh-huh.
Abe Lincoln, that's not a good pun, I guess. But he was, sorry about that.
You're a sick man.
Sorry, Abe.
It just came to me as it came out of my mouth.
We took that in a half a dozen different directions with Ira David Wood when he was on, remember? Never mind.
But he also volunteered to work as a production assistant, my personal assistant, and he did clapboard and did all sorts of things, so... that was kind of fun, though, wasn't it, Scott?
Well, for me, it was just fun being on set. You know, that was my first time ever being on a set that closest to Hollywood. And you watch all the, you watch DVDs and then you watch the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get to see all that stuff. And that's what I've always watched, as much of that as I can. And so, especially with it being my very first time on set, I did want to stay on set as much as possible and help out however I could, so... And I'm very thankful.
Imbued with it somehow, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Scott also has a gift for attention to detail. So I remember, I'll never forget when you're doing the scene at with the planing of the table.
Right.
And we had to go back a few times on that scene, and every single time the prop master didn't have to do a thing because Scott would carefully lay out exactly which tool was where, because he was putting the tools back into the toolbox at the time and during the scene. And it was important to match, of course, where every tool was ahead of time, which was rather randomly placed at first. But it wasn't randomly placed after we started shooting, because Scott made sure that it was placed exactly how it was, even to the inch of moving the box.
Uh-huh. So maybe someday, it'd be like another Eastwood starting out. First an actor.
I see a director here coming on.
Yeah, I would like to get into directing.
Uh-huh. Yep. That's fantastic.
Acting, directing would be pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
No doubt. Speaking of Eastwood, I have yet to see Invictus, which is the rugby game, the rugby players in South Africa.
Right.
It's amazing what that guy's accomplished. But we're not here talking about Eastwood. Back to you on what do you see as being the future of the Rusty Bucket Kids, Kevin?
Well, right now our management team is working on future financing of the series. It's a series of specials going to air every 4 to 6 weeks. We have Dove approval right now, family-friendly approval from the Dove organization. And what's marvelous, and another one of the inspirations from John Demers, is that there's so little that is appropriate for young people on television these days. And even on some of the more major networks, there doesn't seem to be a lot of respect for adults, and the interaction between young people and adults is not always given the highest respect and regard.
No, that's very
and
true.
Oftentimes adults are the brunt of a joke, and the family friendly, here's some good, wonderful interaction between people kind of entertainment, and yet has the element of adventure and historic accuracy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I definitely concur with that. In this day and time, I think we're dealing with the children, the recent generation, as a generation that was raised by television and computers. Very little intimacy between...
In this fast-cutting, flashing kind of editing that's involved, where people don't really have... The young people don't have the appreciation of watching interaction between human beings, mm-hmm. and the thought process and the complexities of emotions. And that's what's so wonderful about this project, is even though there's a spirit of adventure, there's moments where you can really feel and appreciate and understand the struggle that this young Abraham Lincoln is having in as he reaches adulthood and mm-hmm. a step to his next direction in life.
Absolutely. And who is actually making this whole thing come together now?
Well, our executive producer, mm-hmm. John Demers. We've got our president of our LLC, who's
right.
Bud. And Bud Coggins,
mm-hmm.
and of course we have a team of people who are involved in wardrobes and props and so forth. Once we reach production,
right,
and we're going to be bringing on a couple more directors to direct some different things, some other writers.
It's not going to be just
not me. No,
okay.
I initiated it. I was fortunate enough to be the first director, the first writer. I'll continue on as a director at times for mm-hmm. a couple of the specials, and I'll also head the writing team, and I'm one of the producers, so that'll be my main function.
Wonderful.
And casting, of course. And Scott's actually volunteered to be involved in the casting process. We did a children's expo about a month ago, and we saw about 120 young people.
Was that at the Civic Center, or was that a separate deal?
That was at
because you were auditioning at the Civic Center.
That
as
was
well.
At the Civic Center. We had about 110, 120 hopefuls come in, and Scott was able to see the casting process from a different perspective.
Yeah, it is so much more fun to be on the other side of the table.
Yes, less tense.
It is. It's, you get to see, and when you're doing that, it's another good thing because you get to realize some of the things that, a casting director would like to see, and because, when you're actually casting and you see a kid come in, just kind of, sitting there not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, puts it in perspective that you need to be,
more
alive and, upbeat.
To sort of bring them into it.
Right,
more.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny because at the first one, the casting session, I started the lead off and was introducing Scott and I and having the kids sit down, ask, do you have any questions? And by about the fifth audition prospect, Scott was inviting the man and introducing me. And so I was able to lay back and actually let Scott take charge. It was wonderful.
Yeah, he does seem to be the sort of fellow that initiates himself to where he finds his plateau and works it from there. It's definitely what you did with the character in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, the one thing I haven't mentioned is I had the privilege of narrating the story.
And not only narrating, but having a speaking role within the part.
Yeah,
plus
the conductor, right.
Plus helping me. You wrote the poem for the Oracle, which was so beautiful.
And thank you.
And also contributed some great story concepts and us bantering back and forth for the final ending.
Which was great
ending,
fun, exactly.
Which was wonderful.
Our cigar and brandy conversations, yes, I remember well.
Shh, you weren't supposed to say that part.
Okay.
Strike that,
everyone listening. John Demers. By the way, John, in case you are tuning us in, we will gladly accept a phone call from you to the latter part of the show. We've got a lot of people calling this number by mistake today for some odd reason. So just be aware that we will acknowledge the flickering light toward the latter part of the show. We're not going to acknowledge it for the first two-thirds.
I've had my orders here. There don't answer the phone the first half.
It can be a wee bit distracting. Now, I noticed you came in with an outline of things you wanted to point to. Is there anything that I'm not bringing up right now that you wanted to point to about the Rusty Bucket, Kevin?
Well, I guess the main thing is for people, if they want more information about the series of specials and for future casting and information about the cast and the show and so forth, to go to our website, which is www.therustybucketkids.com.
Do you plan on focusing on just American figures, or are you going to like go to Caesar as a child? Or
it's tempting, let me tell you.
Yes. Yeah,
but I think we're really looking at the culture and fabric of American history and those characters involved. So we're talking probably going as far back as the 18th century.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
Anything from 1700 on.
Okay.
So very much the American culture. Yeah.
Right. Okay. But then, you know, once you finish that.
Well, you know,
this could go on for a long time and I can
That's
see
true.
Movies and everything.
Well, funny you should say that, because we certainly are planning on a couple of films within the Rusty Bucket Kids in the future as well.
Well, it sounds like it would be great.
Well, the nice thing about it is, as you pointed out, it's open to all sorts of possibilities.
Right.
So not only do we have this time and period, but who knows if we end up going back to other eras. But at this point, we're sticking to American history.
What do you do about research? I mean, are you being
there's a hornet's nest, no doubt.
Yes.
Boy,
factually, as factual as you can be.
Well, let's just say we never stumble into anything. Everything is highly researched.
Mm-hmm.
I spend hours and hours and hours researching, both through books and the internet a lot. And of course, there's a lot of anecdotal material out there, so you never know what's actual fact and what's fictionalized. So it's about not only finding different facts that you may not find in your traditional history books, but then following up to make sure that you have some sort of background in that fact so that it's true. We have more research to find out if that fact was true.
Right.
So it's research upon research upon research. But it's interesting with the kinds of little details you can dig up about a character. And the authenticity is so important to us. And there's a lot of dialogue that comes out of the young Abraham Lincoln's mouth that is actual dialogue from Abraham Lincoln at some point in his life, or is a dialogue that's paraphrased to fit a younger Abraham Lincoln perspective. But everything's very authentic.
It rang very true. I know I spoke to some people at the Civic Center after watching it, and on several occasions they would say, well, I didn't know that about Abe. You know, I think it really humanized him, much more so than the history books do.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I ask that particularly because the next thought was using it in the school systems.
That is, we refer to it as edutainment, so a school system would be a natural place.
Right.
Absolutely, and it is one of our focal points, is trying to get it into the educational system in some way, and, you know, a lot of homeschools especially.
Yes.
And with our Dove seal of approval, it's very appropriate for all ages.
What is the Dove seal of approval?
Well, the dove is...
I just heard the wings flapping, but what is that?
It's a foundation to encourage and promote the creation, production, distribution, consumption of wholesome family entertainment. Now I know this exactly because I'm reading it off my cue sheet here.
Wonderful.
That was written out.
We won't
before,
tell.
Thank goodness.
We won't tell.
But it's a great seal for us because it shows that family friendly entertainment
right.
is out there and that we're a part of that. And it's funny because of course most of Abraham Lincoln's life he was homeschooled as well. And Scott did some research, and he and I had meetings together about talking about the character, the nature of the character, and of course Scott's personality has a lot of the same elements that I would have perceived Abraham Lincoln as having.
Interesting.
So
it was natural in more ways than one.
Yes, mm-hmm. and there's intensity and yet compassion and sensitivity and strength all at the same time. It was funny because one of our Flip Minot, director of photography, took it upon himself to think that he had to teach Scott how to use an axe.
Yes, but little did everybody know that we had a fireplace in our house for 3 years or so, and I supplied the wood for that.
You were really chopping. Sorry,
yeah,
folks.
It was a well-learned skill.
I have to say, you did look natural in the scenes.
Thank you.
So give us a little background on how you built yourself into the character.
Well, like Kevin said, we had a bunch of meetings, you know, to figure out a lot of the physical aspects. And, you know, like we were talking about, this show really does bring them to life, you know,
mm-hmm.
because...
Very much so.
And so there were a lot of little, you know, just little things that Abraham Lincoln, you know, you would imagine him doing.
Did you read up on him, or where did you find essentially your grit for the character?
Well, I'd already done I used to, you know, try to do all my book reports and research papers on Abraham Lincoln. It turned out so. Yeah,
so we had
there
that
we go.
Going as well. Pretty amazing.
Which I didn't know actually during the casting process.
Interesting.
I know it's all tied together. It's really interesting, but. So I knew, I didn't know very much about his childhood. I mean, other than, you know, he's homeschooled and he taught himself self-education, but not too much, not as much as I know now after the show. But a lot of the information was from Kevin. He would, you know, in our meetings, he would tell me, you know, Abraham Lincoln probably would be like this. And so, yeah, Kevin really helped me with a lot with that.
I remember we had a lot of discussion about the accent and what level of accent. We kind of played around with a stronger accent, a less accent, because he, you know, Abraham Lincoln, the man, of course, was so eloquent. So we had to find this fine line about having the eloquence at 15 and yet still being a 15-year-old within that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you find that blend? And how do you find that? And I think Scott found it beautifully.
And actually what I sensed or what I saw when I watched you playing the character was you gave it a good feel of timelessness, really, which I think was totally valid for the part.
Hmm.
I mean, you had that, the youth, certainly, but there was also this, it was also obvious that the character himself was really more timeless than specific to a time.
You could see both the man and the boy
in the
young person.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. And you can attribute that to Kevin Robert McDermott. He's an amazing director. He really can pull performances out of you, and it's really incredible.
I can see that.
He's an amazing director.
Well, thank you, Scott. Yeah. You know, it was funny because we were doing one of the scenes that was the highest emotional scene next to the chimney where Scott had to... We debated whether it was crying or not crying or tears or what the level of emotion might be, and Scott was able to do it a number of different ways with a lot of numerous emotional levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a couple times when we had it in the can, the crew was great because the crew was very respectful. Sometimes we'd do a tail slate instead of slate at the top just to. Because Scott was involved emotionally, and they were wonderful about their work around the actors.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a couple times where I just turned to Scott and say, "Well, what do you think?" And
yeah, let's do it again.
Yeah,
that was because, I mean, you know, I wanted to make sure that you know we got it good, and you know, on your end, you were watching from the and there were a couple times that we had to do it again, maybe because you know lighting wasn't right, but we were treated very well, and it worked out nice.
You know, the when you're doing a period piece, of course, you have to be aware of the freeway noise and the airlines
because
Unfortunately, they didn't have those type of modern transportation devices.
Yeah, so you just can't put up a barrier sign saying, hey, please, I'm sorry, you've got to reroute yourself.
Keep it down, we're filming.
You're trespassing.
Just want to let everybody out there in Radio Land knowing you're listening to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater here in the studio with my co-host Audrey Layden and also the director, screenwriter, Kevin Robert McDermott of the Rusty Bucket Kids, as well as the, I want to say, kid who played Abe Lincoln, Scott Andrew Taylor, here in the studio today. We're going into the Rusty Bucket Kids film and basically letting the two creative souls have at it. Just want to let everyone know.
We talked, bringing up the airplane noise and freeway noise. I mean, how do you set the stage? This is filmed in Apex?
Yeah, it's filmed in around Apex. A lot of,
and I imagine that there were likely some noises that you didn't even detect at the time.
No, yeah, definitely. And so we actually had to, I think most, if not all of the exterior scenes, we had to actually go back into the studio and ADR it. Add the dialogue over the video. Mm. And so, all those emotional scenes is like, oh, good, we finally got that done. Oh, now you get to do it again. All right, great. So, and it's actually, I found that it's a lot harder to do that in a studio than when you're actually, out there with the book in your hand and you're actually sitting in a chimney.
You're having to time it with the picture of the film? Is that,
That too, that's another.
To a series of beeps and every line, and it has to match, of course, the mouth perfectly.
Yes.
Oh, Lord. That sounds like hard work.
We got it done. And,
well, actually, I didn't notice anything in the film that would have given that away.
All three of our actors, including John Coleman Demers and Roxana Demers, along with Scott, were fabulous with that. And I just want to say, I know we're focusing on Scott because he's here today, but our leads are Roxana Demers and John Coleman Demers for the entire series of specials. And these are two young people who have some theater background, but not a lot of television and film background. And they were amazing, especially through the elements, the cold, the long hours, the having to do schoolwork at the same time, and all the dialogue. I mean, both of them were in every scene.
And not to mention the cold.
And the cold, yes.
Yes.
And there were times that they had to look like they were very warm because it was supposed to be hot outside. And between takes, of course, they'd run to get under their blankets and their coats and their hot chocolate. Yes.
How old are the two main characters?
John Coleman is now 9, and Roxana is 12.
Wow.
And Roxana's had quite a bit of theater experience as well.
Mm-hmm. So that is that their age in the film as well?
Yes.
Or in the movie?
Yes.
The show. Okay.
So I guess we're going to have to get a lot of shows in the can so they don't age out of it.
That's right. That's right.
That's going to be a trick.
Or they can age into it, into that next level of series and specials.
Yes.
When they get older, they'll just have to act younger. Is that the
idea? Audrey pointed it out to us, and we're going to do that.
Good.
What was it Ira David Wood said about playing Scrooge? He started out, he said, 30 years ago, he started playing the character. He had to put all kinds of makeup on. He says, I don't really have to put on much makeup at all anymore.
I have to also come back to the authenticity part of this. It was very important, not only with, of course, the demeanor and the personalities of the characters, to have an authentic feel of these people who we really can't imagine how they really were, since there was no video or other kind of documentation. But also every prop and every piece of furniture and everything, we went to great extreme detail to make period authentic. I went, in part of my research, you asked about the research, I drove through Indiana and stopped, of course, at the Lincoln Boyhood Home where this is supposed to take place. And I must say, I think our set was more authentic. don't tell that to Indiana. But it gave me a wonder. They were wonderful there. It gave me a wonderful sense of the topography and the environment in which Abraham Lincoln was, and what his farm might have been like. And
it is amazing the locations you found in Apex.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful prop master in Will, and also our set designer and costumer Denise
Schumacher, and I've known her for a long time,
and they were just superb. And Will, both had great attention to the detail in terms of wardrobe and props. I mean, even to the point where anything that's written down in the historic sequence is actually in Abraham Lincoln's handwriting and was taken from various documents we found through our research, so that everything is truly his words and his handwriting, even to that specific detail.
That's amazing, because I think that's another aspect that people don't generally think of, particularly in a historic or foreign country set, how much work it is to find the props, to find something that's actually going to be true to the era, true to the space and the place and the usage.
Well, we were very fortunate because we had a number of people who were so excited about the project that they volunteered a lot of their antique furnishings that were actually from the period, or at least close to the period, as well as a lot of prop devices from a couple of different individuals, which was hugely helpful to us.
And you had the most qualified people engaged in the project anyway, in that sense, because I know Denise goes back a long way with theater work. I've known her for years at Memorial Auditorium and places like that, and I was amazed by the costume she built for me as the conductor.
Well, she and you know, this was we didn't have a lot of time to construct anything, whether it be the props or the costuming, so they were under the gun as well in terms of the time element.
No doubt.
You know, I must also talk about the rest of the cast, Charlie Gaddy, who plays the grandfather, who's known as a newscaster here in the Raleigh area for many, many years. And what a joy to work with someone who's so well known, but who's so humble and so nice, and who was wonderful with our two lead kids. And really, even off camera, it looked like they were grandfather and grandkids.
It did. Yeah.
They had such a wonderful warmth about them. And as a director, to have the cast actually be involved in the emotions that were appropriate for the event, for the scene. And of course, we have Mark Roberts, who plays our bungling town manager. And the funny thing about Mark is, of course, a lot of what we see on screen is a lot of Mark's
own nature. Yes, I know.
Which makes him delightful for the role. But a lot of the cast, except for a couple of members of the cast, I tried really hard to involve their own isms in it, and especially with John Coleman and Roxana. We've got our John Coleman-isms and our Roxana-isms, and the different cast members to make them feel very true to their own nature and personalities. Because we have a lot of wonderful young people in this, and they brought a lot of their own nature to the scene, except for the character who plays Melissa, who's actually a sweetheart, but she plays a real evil, not so nice, stuck up girl. But she's actually in real life just wonderful.
So you got to step outside herself.
And there are our other cast member, Akeen Williams. I actually was looking for extras. He's the young boy who plays the foster child of Mark Roberts, and I was looking for extras at the Apex Community Band rehearsal. And I saw this young man sitting there, and I've done this for about 35 years, so I have a little bit of instinct about me. And I approached his mother, and we talked, and I had him audition. She said, well, he's not an actor. He's a dancer, but he's not an actor. Anyway, he got the role.
He had the look, didn't he?
He was magnificent.
Yeah.
So where do people see this?
Well, you can go to...
Well, it did air on ABC TV, but go ahead.
It aired in Raleigh, and we're about to air in Charlotte, and that is going to be in July. And we've also, if you go to our website, www.therustybucketkids.com, you can find... all the information in terms of where it next airs and so forth.
Okay.
And also we have DVDs for sale on the website or at the actual Rusty Bucket store if people are interested in going to see the real location where we shot
in downtown Apex.
Downtown Apex, yes, on Salem Street. And which was one of the other things about the project that I really appreciated from our executive producer, John Demers, and his wife, Michelle Demers, who's also one of the executive producers.
Yes, she is.
And was the fact that it was really meant to encourage businesses and to allow businesses to have an active role as themselves, as the actual business, not as a prop and not as a make-believe fictitious business, but an actual business within the town of Apex. So, of course, we got...
We got All Booked Up, which is the bookstore next to the Rusty Bucket and the Rusty Bucket Shop.
Anna's Pizza.
Right.
We've got...
all on Main Street in Apex.
Yes.
So they're getting some good exposure for playing a part in this.
The Salem Street Pub is another one. The pharmacy there and Common Grounds Coffee Shop. And I hope I'm not forgetting anybody.
I think you've covered any names I can remember anyway. Once again, folks, this is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theatre. I want to say the literary and all else. We'll take anything on over here. It's WCOM 103.5 FM in its new location, the Catskill. Yes. Give us a little scoop on the changeover very quickly, Audrey.
Well, we went through an amazing project of volunteers coming together.
We brought everything but the outhouse.
Oh, exactly. I mean, unscrewing and unwiring every piece of equipment. There were actually 3,000 wires that had to be reconnected.
Wow.
In putting this together over here. And it was just this big trek of volunteers bringing stuff over. And if you go to our website, www.wcomfm.org, you'll see some of the pictures that I was fortunate enough to...
Nice.
I stood on the side when all these people were in there doing heavy lifting and took pictures of them. So we have a slideshow on
Wonderful.
The website that shows...
Actually, you sent me my own little version of it.
Yes, yes. So it's
appreciate everyone that's put their hand in this. I'm afraid I was booked up for the entire time.
Ruffin, our public gallery board of directors. It's the station license is held by the Public Gallery of Carver, and Ruffin Slater and Jacques Menage and Peg Nolan were really the ones that secured this place for us and got it to be livable. And then we had people like Leo, our main engineer, and David Minton, and John Paul, who's in the other room waiting to come.
Hello, John Paul.
Putting wires together here for days and days on time. It's just all volunteer, and it's dedication to the whole idea of community radio, because we believe that freedom of expression is essential to a free society.
Absolutely. And
that's
a big salute to everyone that had a hand in this.
Yeah.
Big salute, big thank you. Now, Kevin, I want to go back to you for a minute and we'll bounce back over to Scott. But you've got a background in film that goes way beyond being involved in the Rusty Bucket Kids. Give us a little sketch of your own life, if you don't mind.
I've written and directed a few short films, have gone on to film festivals and garnered some awards. And
you were involved in Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger
Involved in that I was the acting coach for quite a few films in Hollywood. And I had an acting school for about 26 years, from which I'm now retired. And fortunately, here in Apex.
And is California still home, or is it?
No. Okay. Apex really is primary home.
Gotcha.
At this point. And North Carolina, which brings me to casting. I was very impressed with the amount of talented individuals in this area. Obviously, Scott, but mm-hmm. you know, I've seen some theater productions here now. I've been able to see a lot of different talent walk through the door at the Expo and also in our casting auditions. And a lot of talent here.
No doubt. It's sad that a lot of the larger theater companies in this area seem to feel that they need to reach to D.C. and to New York City to bring talent in, because it's really, we could really be much more pliable with the artists that we have locally if we knew who they were. I think that there's a strong lack in representation.
There's also, I think, this Hollywood, kind of feel that it's greener on the other side of the hill, where,
Indeed.
You know, when I saw Scott, for instance, walk through the door, never in a million years would you cast after seeing one individual. Now, granted, that's the only time that's ever happened.
That's very true.
It's very rare. Don't get spoiled, Scott. It's very rare.
Shrink your head back down to size, will you please?
Let me actually ask you, Scott, did you get nervous at all? I mean, that was your first speaking role. Was there any kind of nervousness or anything?
Oh, no, not at all. No, I actually...
yes. Marvelous lie you just told.
But he pulled it off beautifully.
He did, absolutely. Wasn't even nervous then.
Yeah, I do get nervous. And, you know, I think, once again, you were helping me, you know, get some... ginger ale or whatever, you were, you know, very helpful.
Explain the ginger ale part. What happened?
Uh-oh. Here we go.
we just went for a little walk.
Walk and talk. Gotcha.
Yeah, I had butterflies in my stomach, I think, on the first day. And
I didn't even think about that, but yeah, absolutely. That's certainly a big consideration.
I was very nervous. But by the end of shooting, it was second nature. I wasn't nervous at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say by the end of the first scene or two, it was second nature. You weren't nervous at all.
Maybe. Or I wasn't showing it as much, at least.
You realized you had a purpose, and you can go on living now.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the most exciting thing about the experience for you as an actor?
Exciting. That's hard to figure out because there's so many things.
What, you weren't excited?
No, I'm not. This is very boring. No. Because there are so many exciting things. The exact opposite. And everything about, you know, Rusty Bucket and being on set, it was just so amazing and so, like, you know, it was just so awesome to be on set. So I don't really know what the most amazing thing was, but...
It was definitely a good time anytime I was there. I know that.
Yeah. I really enjoyed, you know, getting to know John Coleman and Roxanne and all the other cast and crew members. That was really amazing. We made a lot of good friendships.
Chris, you do know that you're John Coleman's absolute very best friend in the whole world now.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've become good friends, and so that was really one of the coolest
things.
Sounds
a bit like an older brother vein. That's
it really was.
Popped out.
Yeah.
Good.
If there was any, if John Coleman was tired or anything, all we have to do is call Scott.
Yeah, well, I actually noticed him leaning into you on various occasions when you were sitting somewhere and just sort of taking you as the pillow.
Yeah, we really got to know each other good, and we'll be friends for a long time.
Oh, I'm sure. I was actually keen on seeing John Demers take on some kind of a character role in it because he is such a character, and it wouldn't surprise me if that happens in future episodes, but I was expecting to see some sort of something jump out of the box. And
you'll have to stay tuned, Claudio,
stay tuned,
if you wish
right,
to see that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, since I'm probably going to be telling the story, I will.
This is true. You're going to be the first to know, actually.
Right. Who's that in the box?
You know, I got to tell you, Claudio. I mean, I know you've heard this a million times, but your not only your voice, but of course your the use of your instrument and your voice is so appealing. And gives such an eloquence almost to the storytelling device that we have in the narrative of our show. So I want to personally thank you for that.
Thank you very. I'm absolutely humbled by that statement. Thank you. And I have to hand it to you too because you were directing me in the studio. Of course, I did not realize I was doing this narration in front of an entire class at. what was the name of that? The place in
this is terrible. I can't remember.
No, we went out School of the Arts. I went there with Kevin. We discussed the whole project beforehand, and then went and did the narration. And Kevin brought out the different levels of joy or drama in my tone that he was looking for. And we did this whole spiel. But at the time, I didn't realize that it was actually going to be studied by an entire class.
Well, neither of us did actually.
Okay,
at that point.
We were both put on the spot. I was wondering. It was charming, but I was absolutely. Didn't see it coming.
Can I ask Scott?
Yeah.
Of course, you're still in school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a senior now.
You're a senior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
What do you plan to do from here on? Are you going on to college and studying drama?
I am
drama,
trying to figure
or?
That out. I am.
Just,
really?
Just in case you are the actual reincarnation of Abe Lincoln, there's this theater I want you to avoid.
All right.
Don't go there.
I'm not too sure what if I want to, you know, try to pursue acting or I think that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. Or theater arts in general or something.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then, you know, it all depends on what I'm doing at the end of the senior year too. But I'm looking at a couple colleges and, mm-hmm. you know, considering
something,
trying to keep
something
everything
local
open.
Or out of state?
Out of state, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Want to tell us where?
Well, I've been looking at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Virginia, right.
And then there's Clearwater, I think, and it's somewhere.
Mm. Okay. Out of state, folks. Yeah.
What
within the
have?
Continental United States.
Yeah.
The water's have? Very transparent there.
It's somewhere. But, yeah, I would like to study, you know, theater arts or something along those lines, but...
I think with any luck, we may be having a call from John Demers, but we're not absolutely
Hello,
sure yet.
WCLM.
Could be a wrong number. We'll find out in just a moment.
It's John Demers.
It's John Demers. Wonderful.
Hey, John.
He has been eavesdropping.
Hello. He follows me everywhere.
Oh, my God.
You know, I have to meet with him later today. Yes. He gives me these writing assignments.
I thought I saw him in your closet when I dropped in.
Hey, John, I thought we already had our meeting last night.
we did. This is just the call that gets made to make sure everyone knows that I am alive and well.
Glad to, I can hear your clock ticking.
It is. It's a nice place to be compared to where I was a year ago.
Well, you haven't scolded me for anything I've said so far, so I figured I'm playing it pretty safe.
No. I haven't caught the whole show. I know some folks have, and I said to Claudia that I would try to give a call in towards the end of the show, and so I'm trying to do that. I'm sure that the show has gone just fine with Scott Andrew Taylor and Kevin Robert McDermott, because those two are astounding, and I am impressed beyond reproach with Scott.
Well, thank you very much.
It's been a lot of fun here. Hey, absolutely. John, anything that you want to add that we may not have touched upon?
Well, you know, we talked about how we get into the schools and the education system, and Kevin, you seem to have forgotten that you are writing on our behalf the History's Heroes, sponsored by the Rusty Bucket Kids, in the Kidsville News Magazine, which goes into 80,000 school children's hands in the Wake County and surrounding schools each month. And so that's a pretty big deal. The first issue was, of course, about Abe Lincoln. The second issue, we talked about the Wright brothers. And I'm not sure what Kevin has in store next, but that's one of the ways we're getting out there.
Well, we have Edison was the next one, and then Amy has helped us with this next one that's going to be about Mary Louise Alcott.
Okay.
Nice.
All right.
Nice.
Yeah, we haven't actually broached on that yet, so that's a good thing to bring up.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're there, and of course, you know, we're associating with a lot of great family companies. You know, Golden Corral was our sponsor down in Wilmington on the CBS affiliate down there, WILM, and of course we were on the CBS flagship station here, WRAL-TV, and we'll be down at WJZY CW network down in Charlotte, July.
And of course, so, I saw you fundraising this weekend for PBS.
Yes, I was.
Yes, you were.
I love UNC-TV.
All suited up.
Yes, and it's not too late. 1-800-984-9090, and you can still give to UNC-TV.
They need
and
help.
Then when you do that, you need to make sure you come back to WCOM and give to them equally.
Thank you. I was trying to figure out how to do that, and you did it for me. Fantastic. Yes.
You got to cover all the bases.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've got the switch here where I can just cut you off if you leave us out.
That's right.
I know how that works. I'm always on my best behavior now.
Well, at some point, we need you and your kids back on the show here. We haven't had them.
We will be glad to come on anytime you want this summer, sir, and chat about what's coming up. I'm sure you've touched on some of that. We've got scripts that are. I've got one that's probably going to be ready in a few days to a week that we'll be looking at. And
wonderful.
We can't tell you who it is yet.
Right. Kevin's been very secretive about that, so I haven't even forced his hand.
I'll give you a hint. Y'all want a hint?
Please. You heard it here first. We haven't heard it yet.
The character that we're writing about in this historical component has already passed away.
Oh, you practically gave it away, John.
What?
Now I know immediately.
What?
Could it be?
Yeah, he's no longer with us.
I bet he's a historic character as well.
I'm still feeling quite well, thank you very much.
And it's a he. We've got that going.
We've got the he going, okay.
I've given you 50% of the potential people out there, right? Something like that. Oh, man.
Yes.
Well, listen, I've got to run. I know you guys will wrap up. Again, I want to thank you, Claudio, for having Scott and Kevin on the show.
Oh,
they are
pleasure.
Phenomenal folks. Can't do what we do without Kevin, and we can't do it without the kind of actors that we get from people like Scott. And they're right around North Carolina. Don't have to leave the state to find a quality an actor.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, you guys have a great midday, and let us know, Claudia, when this is posted up for rebroadcast and podcasting.
It should be a couple of days. Ernie Hood will be putting it on after he does his show tomorrow. So.
Hey, before you leave, John, tell us about the next air date that we have for the Rusty Bucket.
Well, the next air date comes up in July. It is a Saturday. It will be at noon. It is July the 10th, and that will be in Charlotte. And we really encourage, if you know folks down in the Charlotte area, even if you aren't at home at noon, DVR it. DVR it. Let's keep those ratings going. We've had good ratings so far. We're going to keep that up.
Watch it many times.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Thanks again, John.
Take care.
Take care, John.
Have a great day.
Take care. And Kevin?
Bye-bye.
While I still have you here, let's go ahead and give them that website and all the Rusty Bucket information one more time.
Well, the best place to go, of course, is our website at www.therustybucketkids.com.
Wonderful.
And that'll give you anything you need to know.
And you've been listening, folks, to Kevin Robert McDermott, who is the director screenwriter for the Rusty Bucket Kids. And we've also had the young man playing Abe Lincoln, who's going to be far more involved in future productions as well. And give us your full name. You haven't addressed yourself yet.
No. I am Scott Andrew Taylor.
There we go.
That's my name.
And he really does look like the young Abe Lincoln, and I've had, of course.
And I have to say then, better looking.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Not as weather-worn as old Abe was.
Right.
But we didn't see him in his youth until now.
Yes, we didn't. No, it's true. Anyway, it was fun having you folks on. I think we've got John Paul coming up next with his show, so we might as well go
ahead.
I mean,
wait a minute. Are we done already?
Hey!
This was fun.
Almost.
It was a gas. Thank you so much for having us.
It's been an absolute good time, yeah. I will, and I tell everyone that comes on, since you've now broken into being part of the Speakeasy family, this won't be your first or your last time.
I look forward to the next.
Well, it will always be the first time.
There we go. There we go. That's why I have her as a co-host. And that, of course, was Audrey Layden. And on that note, we're going to sign off here at Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Until next time, cheers.